the platform. Step up and speak out.
This is a good evening at ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwitarai. It is the platform. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. It's just gone 29 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. I'm on until 8:30. And before I introduce the topic, just a few of the frequencies you can listen to us on. Bybridge 106.1, Nyanga 98.2, Gweru 104.3, Bulawayo in my hometown 106.7. And we're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. If you want to listen to us over the internet, it's www.zfmstereo.co.zw. Our WhatsApp number is 0731-168-045. And our calling number is just open, is 0772-168-045. So, on Twitter, we're also at ZFM Stereo. So I'll be keeping an eye out for your contributions. Now, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe allocated a cumulative figure of $1 billion towards supporting companies in the manufacturing sector in 2018. The manufacturing sector's export earnings were $222 million, and if the amount is deducted from the manufacturing sector's allocation of $1 billion, this means the sector has a trade deficit of over $800 million. For example, Capri Zimbabwe revealed that it's been closed since last November because of foreign currency shortages. Earlier this year, the CZI indicated that the majority of Zimbabwean businesses are left with less than a month's supply of foreign-sourced raw materials and could come to a complete standstill if the country's foreign currency shortages are not addressed urgently. In the studio, I've got today, first of all, an economist, Professor Tony Hawkins. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good evening.
And then also here joining us, made reference to someone who made those comments a couple of weeks ago, the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Mr. Sifelane Jabangwe. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
What is the situation of industry today? Just give us a rundown.
In terms of allocations, not much is really changed, but there's not been much currency to allocate from the RBZ. And here we were making reference predominantly to those companies that were producing basic commodities that had been being prioritized for allocations. But what has happened to some of them, they've gotten letters of credit process for them to allow them to bring in materials in the short term, and some have managed to get this process. Some are in the process of doing that, and yeah, essentially this is what has happened for some of those that are producing basic commodities. But essentially, we are in the lean part of the. Of the current generation sort of period for the economy, so there isn't much to go around. But of course, that's why we've been lobbying for a platform that will allow, an open platform that will allow the companies to trade the currency that's available for them to access that. But so far, there hasn't been that much currency that's come on. Except, as I said, for those that have gotten letters of credit that the RBZ has managed to issue for them.
So, when you say some of it has been processed, are we talking about the fact that the lines of credit have been processed and the goods have arrived, or this is just the first part?
Well, the process, some of them are in transit. What we were highlighting was that companies are now eating into their lead times, which is why we're saying something needed to be done within a fortnight or around of that period that we're talking about, to ensure that you prevent the total run out of stock. So I think some of the companies will be those that managed to process the letters of credit on time. Those will be able to avoid any closure. And we're also happy at least to hear that Delta managed to get something to help them to, as you know, their beverage plant it closed, so they said they were opening that. They received some consignments that would be enough for a short period, but look, that's we hope that we can move away from that sort of thing where we have to wait for allocations and and then you know we have these sort of hiccups and challenges and gaps.
Okay, 0731 168 0452, do get in touch with us, and we want to have your opinion in as far as this is concerned. Now, Professor Hawkins, I want to go back to last year. Last year after the elections, you talked about hope over experience as far as the economy is concerned. Have you seen any signs in terms of improvement, especially things that target businesses? Maybe looking at the policies that have been put in place since that statement you made in September 2018?
No, I don't think I have seen any real improvement. I think we have to face up and what has just been said by the president of the CZR. This is a hand-to-mouth situation where the likes of Delta are being told, well, you've got enough to last you 3 weeks or something, and hope that something will turn up. And I think what we have seen in recent weeks, in fact, ever since the election, we've seen the chances of international support recede quite significantly for various reasons, which I won't go into, but I think we all know what they are. And we have to face up to the fact that we have a currency that is too strong for the country, that a situation where firms are allocated money by a central bank who doesn't really understand how the firms operate. They don't have hands-on experience. They don't know what it's like at the coalface. And it's not fair to ask them to allocate currency. So what you need is a system where exporters earn currency, they then sell that currency in the market through their bank and so on. And you have a market for foreign exchange. Now, we don't have that at the moment because we have a market that is an exchange rate that is artificially determined, and it is the wrong exchange rate. Just to give you one example, since 2010, when just about after we dollarized, the South African prices and exchange rates have moved by about half the extent ours have. And what I'm saying is that Zimbabwe's become much more expensive because we have a strong dollar. And South Africa has become much more competitive because it has a relatively weak rand. And until we adjust for that, and there has to be, and there will be, I'm not going to tell, I don't know when, but there will be a major devaluation of what you might call the local currency, by which we mean the bond notes and the RTGS balances. They will have to be devalued against the US dollar. And then you need to open up the system and allow exporters to trade and importers to buy. And in that way, you'll get the market determining the allocation of foreign exchange, not some chap sitting in the Reserve Bank who, you know, is telling very often he's got competing demands that he can't really make a decision between. It's like somebody who wants an urgent raw material for, say, pharmaceuticals, and somebody who wants fuel. How do you decide who should have X and who should have Y? I mean, it's an impossible choice.
So what I'm hearing there is that when you talk about massive devaluation of what you might end up referring to as a local currency, doesn't that then also make people default to redollarization, and then getting us back to that to that situation where we were uncompetitive again? I think I was listening to the same statement that the US dollar in Zimbabwe was overvalued by 50 to 80%. So doesn't that sort of get you from the pit into the fire?
Well, look, at the end of the day, we do need a local currency. We at the moment we have it in the bond, and the RTGs are the pseudo local currency because we're using them to buy goods and services and so forth. And what it has seen, I mean, what it has proven, that you need a softer currency. In the past year, is the rate for the RTGs is gotten lower. What has actually happened is that we've become more competitive in terms of against imports, and also in terms of exports. So you've seen the value of exported manufactured goods actually growing from the time that we that the valuation set in beyond the 30% premium, and so you can't run away from the fact that, you know, we need the local currency. We need to ensure, because without it, all that will happen is like what we saw. We became less competitive. We were in a state of deflation, and we were now, you know, we had more currency going out of this economy than what we were generating. And so the local currency route, or a softer currency, is key to any sort of economic stability and growth. Because to some extent, like you said, you know, we are, the costs in this country were overvalued by 50 to 80%, which is why when you saw that premium, when it hit the 50% and beyond, suddenly, you know, we companies have actually been exporting. But we then believe that because what you then saw is the gross inflows for the economy were slightly about 6 billion, which is the highest that this economy has ever generated. So, but then the issue then also that happened is that we're having more pain in terms of failing to access. But this is partially because the demand for Forex also has been growing, but the allocation system, we believe, is what you now need, something that can fairly allocate this currency, and to ensure it speedily and efficiently allocate the currency. And we also have a rate that is determined by the number of transactions that are actually going, and the value and the volume of transactions that is ongoing, rather than what we have at the moment, where the rate of the day is actually determined by someone who's been saying, look, I want this much today. Whether nothing is happening at that rate, it doesn't matter. But that becomes the rate that everyone says, oh, today's rate is this. It's not dependent on, is that the price which buyers are also prepared to take? So the issue of a platform, and again, is for now, is the next step to move from where we are. It's also very important to have that.
But as I said, the businesses will want to default to charging things in the hardest currency.
Well, you know, we've seen that. You know, businesses have wanted to do so. I mean, we've seen it on the market. But what has happened is you've got the money, the largest chunk of money that is out there, that is in the hands of consumers, is your RTGs, your bond notes. So that is what you will see coming more and more to the businesses. And sometimes, you know, as businesses, yes, we may want the US dollar to say, look, because it seems to be simpler to trade with, because then you're saying, I'm not going to have to look for the currency, I just bring in my raw materials. But eventually, it is from a competitiveness perspective, someone with a dollar will now say, look, Zimbabwe, you're ranked, I don't care, you're ranked number 155 out of 190. I don't care that your cost of doing business, but this same commodity that you want to charge me $1.20, I can get it from South Africa for a dollar. So why should I get it from you? So automatically, they'll get it from where they'll get it, where it's cheaper. But the US dollar allows you to get this commodity from anywhere in the world. So they will be able to go and identify other economies which are cheaper, whereas we are paying US dollar salary. We'll be, let's say for example, we may be paying US dollar salaries, paying US dollar for our power, paying US dollar for our utilities. And if what happened in South Africa the last time was just highlighted by the prof, where the currency then devalued by 50%, we are gone. At that time, we were doing fairly well, and that movement in the currency rate suddenly changed everything. We're now sliding down from that day forth, that the rand devalued from the 7 the 6-7 that it used to trade to
about 14. So I know that this is a conversation even outside Zimbabwe and geos, where The United States has for long accused China of devaluing its currency so that it's more attractive. So, for example, companies in the United States are known to outsource production to countries with weaker countries, which translates to cheaper costs. So, for example, the aforementioned costs such as labor and other things, in as far as that's concerned. So, I know we've talked about it just a bit, Professor Hawkins. If we decide to deal solely in what is essentially the third strongest currency in the world, does it not make us also unattractive for opportunities where countries like the United States can decide to come and say, okay, we want to, some companies might think manufacturing some of their products in Zimbabwe could be an idea?
Yes, I think that's true. But, you know, the exchange rate is just, albeit the most important one, it's just one determinant of this sort of thing. I mean, the cost of labor is very important. But in Zimbabwe, and this has been one of our problems, certainly for manufacturing, is that the logistics basically are not great because we're landlocked. Mm. We have a big industrial, the continent's biggest industrial power next door. They have much better logistics. They have a more competitive exchange rate. And a much bigger market. So if anyone's going to come and invest in manufacturing in particular, they're going to look at South Africa first rather than Botswana or Zimbabwe or Mozambique. It's different when it's mining or tourism or agriculture, things that are what you might call location-based investments. Manufacturing is much more footloose and tends to go where there's a sort of a bundle of advantages, not just one advantage. Now, cheap labor is perhaps becoming less and less important, and other logistical things and access to high-tech and high-tech skills. And this, of course, is where a country like Zimbabwe does have a bit of a disadvantage. We've got lots of people being educated, but not enough being educated in the high-tech area. And that's something you can't solve overnight.
But sometimes, you know, you can look at it this way. Fortunately, a lot of the people that are working in South Africa and in the region and are actually Zimbabweans. So you've got an opportunity to be able to attract them back. And even now, as you a counter-argument to the issue of being landlocked, there are places in South Africa that are further from the coast that we are from, Beira. So the logistics now becomes important. To what extent have we invested in ensuring more efficient logistics to from here to Beira and from here to Maputo and so forth, which are those could be the closest maybe other ports, alternate ports to Zimbabwe. So, but if we are not futuristic and invest there, then it won't matter. It will still not be attractive. Because we need to look at that bundle of issues that the investors will look at and say, how do we ensure that we when they look at all those, we become very attractive. And so it's not just having the resources, because the resources can be bought as commodities and taken to another more lucrative location. So it's important that we actually do look at it from that perspective of the investor, look at the stability of the currency situation, what is it that you have to offer, and to become attractive. So again, like you're rightly saying, a stronger currency is certainly as it is unattractive to us as well as manufacturers in Zimbabwe. You'll find that no one will come to a country with a high currency, and unfortunately our labor costs are also regionally relatively higher. But again, looking into the future, the issue about labor cost is in the next maybe 20 years will not matter much, with industry 4.0 coming, robotics and the 3D printing and other things that are actually require less labor, where machines will be doing most of the work. What you now need are the key trained technical staff which are being referred to.
Okay, 0731-168-045. That's our WhatsApp number. Do get in touch with us in the studio here. Let's have the conversation. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about a comment made by a different economist earlier today, or was yesterday, and as far as the underlying strength of the economy. Is the economy still strong? Is ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest array.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
It's still the platform. My name is Larry Quiderai, and you're still tuned into ZFM Stereo, Chivo 99.8, Chimani Mani 91.3, Chulocha 97.9. I'll remind you of small frequencies as we go. 0731-168-045 is the number you can get in touch with us. And I've got here a message from Collins in Mtorashanga. Says, my question to Mr. Javangwe is, who is going to have confidence in the local currency with the current government? Secondly, what profits margins is the country pulling on? Is the industry pulling on local goods? My calculation is between 75 and 150%, which is utter madness. The industry is not helping either. They are driven by greed. How would you respond to that?
Look, as industry, actually, when you look at it, remember there are two things. The goods get to the market through the retail sector. And as industries, we have to be competitive. Our margins, I think a number of companies have actually been quite in terms of the modest in their pricing, which is why, like, I think you've seen, like when the uniform madness happened, there's a company out there in Southerton that was actually selling the uniforms, and there were now queues happening there because the same product was then being taken and put in the retail outlets, and you'd find maybe three times or so of the prices. So we do have some work to do between the manufacturers and the retail sector. The retail sector has also got its own also justifications for the level of margins that they are putting on. They are saying they will also look at the cost of doing business in Zimbabwe, the investments that they have put in, the recoveries that they have to. But at the end of the day, when you look at the product from the manufacturer right up to the retail, yeah, perhaps you are seeing that's 70%, and it's not, as I say, it's not out of greed. Partially, it's actually has been to do with the nature of the environment that we are operating in, the high cost environment that we are operating in. Yeah.
Okay. So what I do want to ask as a follow up to that is to say, the retailers were the ones coming out and saying, you know what, it's the manufacturers, they're demanding US dollars now as payment. And even when you look at the value of the US dollar, the value of the product, you know, the difference between what it costs to make it, they have made arguments around that and what they end up buying it for. And even to some extent accusing retailers of wanting to make a bit of a killing of some sort of matter. Not necessarily retailers, I mean the manufacturers.
Look,
there have been accusations made.
I won't lie that sometimes the margins have been relatively high. I mean, okay, here's the thing. You have businesses operating in a very uncertain environment, and they will price that in, that uncertainty. Let's say you're selling, if they are selling for RTGS, and they are not sure what will be the value of the RTGS, there will obviously be a premium that's gone in there. And also this issue about currency now being traded in the black market in the formal system, again carrying a premium that's to do with that situation. So what you have, that's why now when people start to compare the cost of commodities sometimes here and in South Africa, those costs are all carried within that price. The cost of labor that we're talking about is also carried again within that price, which is so that then adds up to us being a high cost environment. Then the other issue, I think, also like is in addition to that, is then becomes the uncertainty relating to volumes. So like, the companies will price relative to what volumes that they're expecting to get. So again, with the uncertainty, companies will most likely be prudent, and sometimes that becomes even divisive. But is the environment, which is why we would like a more stable, predictable environment, which will allow us to, as companies, to then, you know, really know a plan with what we expect the situation to be. And usually when you make your projections in a more stable environment, you will not be too far off. But at the moment, people will take a prudent approach to a lot of things that they are doing. So that, unfortunately, also then results in slightly in higher prices.
I could just add to that, actually, in support of the comment about volumes. You know, if you look at what's likely to happen in this economy over the next few months, volumes are going to suffer because there's been a huge increase in taxation. First of all, this what I regard as a nonsense 2% tax, and then the quadrupling of the fuel tax. And in effect, what you're doing is you're shifting an awful lot of money, 3 billion perhaps more, out of consumer spending into government. And that means that everyone right across the economy who's selling to consumers is going to find a smaller market. And at the same time, wages in real terms are going to be going down because prices are going to be going up. And then we've got a whole lot of other price increases to come, things like utilities and school fees and health fees, and so all of these things are going to go up in line with inflation. And so it's going to be very, very tough for businesses. And so you can see, as a defensive strategy, if you like, I wouldn't call it profiteering, I call it a defensive survival strategy, to try and compensate for your lost volumes by having a higher markup. And this is what happened, of course, in the hyperinflation years, and it's not surprising it's happening again now.
Can it be arrested by a new currency then, as one of the reforms? Can the currency reform arrest that?
Well, the new currency will be very inflationary. I mean, we've had what the economist calls two inflation shocks so far. The first one was that 2% tax in October. Mm-hmm. The second one was the fuel duty. And the third one will be when devaluation comes. And that's going to give us a lot of inflation for a period of time. Mm. Now, it's impossible for anyone to guess how long that is going to take. But I think people who are talking about the economy recovering in 2 months or 3 months are living in cloud cuckoo land, or you know, a very different planet from where we are today. And I think, you know, people have got to face up to the fact that it's going to be a very difficult year for people in Zimbabwe, for the business community and for the consumer.
And now we've had talk of a currency coming in this year sometime. How much confidence will there be in that currency?
Well, it's like asking, you know, how long is a piece of string, I'm afraid. It's a very difficult thing to say. It depends what are the policies that are surrounding that currency, whether it's got any international backing, because, you know, to start your own currency, you do need reserves, and we don't have any reserves, none. So you've got to somehow pick up $1 or $2 billion probably in reserves. Now, how you're going to do that is difficult. And this, you know, brings me to if you like, another point, and that is that there's a belief, and, you know, we've been guilty of that in this discussion, that the problems in Zimbabwe can be solved by economic policy. And the answer to that is they can't. They're much broader than that, and you need a consensus running right across the economy of stakeholders and so on, trade unions and civil society and businesses, as well as government, to agree on some kind of strategy that would make sense in what's going to be a very difficult situation.
Look, I can add that, you know, we believe that production, there has to be a production issue. You know, the issue is this. You put simply, I would think, the country will become richer if we accumulate more of the foreign currency, US dollars, just like China is doing, because then with that money you can do all sorts of things. So what are the things that will make us, one, generate more, spend less, and utilize better. Those are the kind of things that we need to gain an understanding on, and among all the stakeholders, because eventually we are all participating one way or the other, be it the government, which then if there's a, you know, the fiscal issues that may be at play, or be it that, you know, there's inadequate production in areas there where we could produce and export or produce and ensure that we don't have to import. So if we change the currency without dealing with those particular issues, it will not really change much. But if we have actually then secured or strengthened the production base, you will find that it's a lot more simpler. The import cover that's required could be generated if we generated more exports, or at least of this 6 billion that we are generating, if we then reduced our imports to 5 billion where they were in 2016, 2017, we would then be now having to, you know, have this 1 billion being a surplus. But what has happened sometimes is like what happened in 2018. We grew our gross inflows to 6 billion, but our imports also moved to 7 billion. So we then didn't achieve much. But to me, it shows that there is potential if we make the necessary sacrifices and manage this. And if we do that, it also becomes a little bit simpler to get even external support, you know, and even investment, you know, if you hear that. Because I mean, it's easier for people to come in if they know they can come out. But right now, with this situation that we have, the first question that, you know, the investors always ask is, you know, how do I then, if I want to disinvest, how do I get my money out? What I want to do may not work. So if it doesn't work, I want to be able to come out. If it does work and I earn dividends, I want to be able to get paid.
But then you've come in before and said one of the key reasons why a bigger demand for foreign currency, for example, is because industries are just working a lot more now. So isn't it just a case of chicken and egg situation? How are you going to raise the money for the raw materials or the capital input that needs to go in without increasing your export bill, your import bill in the first place?
Yeah. Well, when you look at it, like you're saying, you remember you said business got about a billion. That was the allocation that went to business. And we're saying the country grossed 6 billion. So, and when you look at how businesses operated in 2018, again, the limitation, and there was an increase in capacity utilization from 45 to 48%, and I think an indicated increase in volumes of about 12%, which is a good thing. But when you look at the fact that the limitation for a lot of companies even throughout that period was still currency, inadequate currency. But then we're looking at the other 5 billion to say, look, was that used efficiently? We actually don't know. You know, could we not have directed more of that money more towards production? You know, that was possible. Part of what we imported, we know it was crude oil. We were importing 20 million per month of that crude oil. To what extent then, if we know we've got a value chain action plan going, but those are the kind of things that if we to be effective in terms of ensuring we get to grow the soya locally, we'll be saving that 20 million per month that would have which was an outflow. So yes, there is an issue of industry doing more, but there's also, we believe, a bigger case of how have we utilized that which didn't go to, that which we are not sure how it will go to industry.
So what would be the plan going forward then?
Look, it's important that, you know, the platform, we believe, will help instead of just having the allocation. Then we'll know where the money is going, because that's one thing. It brings a transparency as to who is bidding for the money, where is it going, and if there are to be policies to support any particular sector, you now know what policies to put in place to at least drive the, so the platform is right now, that's why we keep emphasizing on that. We need, it will at least help us to know, and also it becomes a more efficient allocation mechanism.
Professor Hawkins, Eddie Cross in an interview recently said the bond note is currently the strongest in the region. And he says this indicates an underlying strength of the Zimbabwe economy despite the current problems. Would that be correct?
No, not at all. It's an astonishing statement. You know, both of us have just been saying that the problem is the currency is too strong. So how one can see a strong currency, in inverted commas, as a measure of the strength of the economy, I really don't know. I mean, one's got to look at the facts. If you look at the numbers, we haven't created another job in the private sector in this country since the 1980s. We had about 800,000 people in the private sector employed. It's about the same. If you look at manufacturing industry, it used to employ over 200,000 people. The last figure, it's under 100,000 people. Manufacturing production is, well, the figures of the volume production are very low. We've seen we have two-thirds of the population living in poverty, on less than below the poverty line. We have less than 15% of the people employed in a formal job. I could go on and on. And to say that that's a strong economy is simply not true. We have very low level of investment in this country. Not enough. You know, to create jobs, you have to have investment. And we need to invest two, perhaps three times what we've been investing for the last 20 years, not just in the last few years, but the last 20 years. And that is why, you know, we have 3 million people or whatever who've left the country. This is not a strong economy. It's one that has struggled now. It's hardly grown since the end of the GNU in 2013. This economy has flatlined. And this is one of the reasons why the import bill has gone down, because we're not investing. And to invest, you've got to import. And if you look at what happened during the GNU 2009, 2013, imports were very much higher than they are now. And the reason for that was because people were investing, businesses were picking up and growing. Now, we've come full circle.
Maybe a question also, maybe to the professor, you know, the issue about the currency strength that he referred to, we're also trying to understand what is this. This is the open market rate, right? And someone said our gross inflows relative to GDP are actually extremely high, though we don't have reserves. But could we be having a case a bit of the Dutch disease, where, you know, perhaps some mineral exports and so forth, but then resulting in a stronger, you know, that RTGS, and even though it's traded out in the open market, you know, it's still at some rate which is strong. Could it be that, you know, that could be at play? But certainly that rate, what's holding it at that level, where would they have expected it to have devalued to, you know, to the range, perhaps that reflects the current balances we have in the economy?
Well, yes, I think if you look at the trade numbers for the last year, we had a trade deficit of about $2.6 billion. That was because although exports increased, imports, as was being said earlier, imports increased much more steeply, and in that situation, it means your currency is uncompetitive. If you went to any country in the world and showed them those numbers, they would say, "Well, gosh, we must do something about the currency." They wouldn't say we must control imports and have import controls. We can't have a situation. I spent some years working with SADC on the industrial strategy for SADC, and it was enormously embarrassing going to meetings and here the Zimbabwe delegation would come along and say, we're going to have import controls and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and break all the protocols that they had signed with the SADC free trade area. so long as you have that kind of mindset of control, a control economy, or perhaps I'd call it a command economy, you're not going to get the kind of growth you want. And this country has deindustrialized. You know, go back to the 1990s, about a quarter of output, GDP, was in fact from manufacturing industry. Today it's about half that. And that is where you should be creating jobs. And as I was saying, we've lost 100,000 jobs in manufacturing, probably more.
0731-168-045. We're going to take a quick break. I want to read a message as soon as we come back. But I also want to go to something that some people have been talking about, this thing called bailout. What is the story behind? What are the implications? From watching Professor Hawkins' presentation of that, is when you let the situation get out of your hands.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
So tune into the platform on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. It's gone 12 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. I'm here with you until half past the hour. And just before we went to the break, there was the talk of a softer currency. There's a long message here, but the gist of it says, set up a committee. What does the prof think about solving the currency situation issue this way? Set up a committee to come up with what currency to use in the interim between the one euro and rand. Now, with the currency issue causing increasing economic havoc, I suggest we immediately switch to the yuan as the official accounting currency, because the euro has uncertainties, as the same with the rand. So what would you say to something of that nature?
Well, I think it's very difficult to use a adopt a currency that is not freely traded. And that is the problem with the Chinese RMB, the Chinese yuan. It's hedged around with lots of exchange controls and so on. At some future time, yes, it might be a currency to look at. But in any event, you know, if you don't have your own currency, you really give up quite a lot of autonomy and control over your economy. You can't set your own interest rates, usually. You have problems with, if you've got someone else's currency, it may suit the Chinese, or if you're talking about the rand, the South Africans, but it doesn't necessarily suit Zimbabwe. So it is an advantage to have your own currency, which is why very few countries don't have their own currency. Unless they voluntarily go into something like the euro. So I would not be keen on linking up with another currency after our experience with the dollar. The dollar was fine from 2009 to 2013, and then we started running into problems.
So are you suggesting that somewhere between 2013 and now, we should have already come up with our own currency?
I think we should have recognized that I think 2015-16 was the crunch period when the rand really dived, and that was when we realized that we were uncompetitive in the region, and that was very difficult, particularly for manufacturing, which most of its exports are in fact in the region. So it was probably then we should have started to do something about it.
Okay, and now speaking about before I come back to the issue of this big word that's been being thrown out now, the bailout issue. In terms of what is needed by industry, how much is required by industry to continue producing and supplying specifically for the local market, and how is it shared?
Okay, we're looking at, we probably need around 280 million per month, roughly, to just keep going at...
this is to service the local market.
To service the local market, which is why when we got a billion, we're saying we need almost 2 billion for at least to just service the local market, keep our heads above water, and ensure that we don't grow the external debt to creditors, you know. So that's what we believe would be required by industry.
And given that you're servicing the local market, and like much of the local market is not going to be using the US dollar. How would that come about now? Would it still be an allocation system, or you've been making reference to this bidding system?
Yeah, because we do have net exporters in the economy, which is why, and also the diaspora. As you're aware, the diaspora remittances are sent over, and the recipients get them in natural US dollars. Mm. But there's no system for them to allow them to get the true value for their money. The only way, place, if they want RTGS or the mobile money, they have to go and do it in the black market. So we're saying with this platform, you actually have that money coming on a platform where it can be traded, and then the manufacturing sector can get it. You know, there have been arguments about, you know, the manufacturing sector is only generating 200 million, so you should do more. But I think that leaves out the aspect that for most companies, let's assume the import content is about 50%. So the 1 billion that the companies got actually saved another billion. So in order to make goods worth 2 billion, you only need a billion worth of dollars in money, because this comes in your import substitution, which then reduces your outflow of currency. So you'll probably find that your net exporters, which may be in the resource, if this platform were there and they are trading their money freely, they get a fair value for what they would have traded in local currency, depending on the going rate. The local company produces, and they are able to pay local cost using what they would have procured from these local companies. The local company produce imports raw materials, produces, and at times is actually able to service the mine, is able to service to provide consumer goods for the market. So these are all things that are intertwined, and we need to make sure that we sort of create that balance. But then what is more important is to actually be able to move from this situation of stagnation, which is where the issue about strategy that was spoken by the prof earlier on. At the moment, you know, we've got the Vision 2030. I think that, you know, whether we all should sort of rally around that, because 2030 is coming. And for me, it says, what will we be in 2030? And the aspiration is to be middle income and so forth. But we'll not get there without a strategy. So this is where now we need to come up as a nation to say, look, in 2030, we know the population will be something, because we've got a certain growth rate of population. So the people that will be there, that will be in 2030, what is the lifestyle that they are going to have? It's going to be dependent on what we do today. Are we doing anything to develop the economy further? Or are we just consuming what we have? So in other words, the same problems that we have today will be the same ones. Are we consuming more and investing even less? Which means by that 2030 again, we'll actually be poorer than we are today.
Okay, now back to that particular thing that I've been referenced to, the concept of bailouts. People have been talking about, we should be trying to get bailouts from different people. There's got conversations doing the rounds that, you know, been asking South Africa for one. The latest conversation is that we might even be having conversations with other countries like Kenya and so forth. How, is there a chance, and can a bailout help this economy?
Well, I think a bailout is probably inevitable because of our debt situation. We are in as a country, we have one of the very few countries in the world where all our debt, both foreign and domestic, is in United States dollars. And that's a very serious problem, because the domestic debt has doubled in the last few years, last 5 years or so. And it goes beyond that, because everyone's bank account says your account is in US dollars. Now, I think we all know in the studio that's not the case. But if we try to take the money out, we get it out in bond notes, or we do it on an RTGS through a card or a swipe and so on, which is not the same as a US dollar. So there has to be a kind of a bailout. And that bailout would have to come from international agencies, you know, basically spearheaded by the IMF. And but for that to happen, we have to repay $2 billion. Plus or minus in arrears, which we don't have, and so we'd have to borrow those, and then we have to.
It just creates another debt.
Yeah, yes, and then we have to talk to the IMF to organize a program, which will take a long time. And then even if we get that, we have to get it through the IMF board. And the IMF board has a U.S. representative on it. And that U.S. representative is governed by ZEDERA, the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Reconstruction Act, which stipulates that he or she must oppose support for Zimbabwe. So it's not just an economic problem, a financial problem, it's a political problem as well.
So essentially that's the case you're talking about, that once you go out there, the terms and conditions are now out of your hands. And they are determined by who you're asking for.
That is right. The terms and conditions are pretty much dictated. Zimbabwe wouldn't be the first country to be in this situation, obviously. I mean, Zambia in the late 1980s, early 1990s, was in a very similar situation. They had to go through the same sort of process, which was very wrenching and very difficult and very unpopular with people. And this is always the problem with these kinds of what we used to call structural adjustment programs, but that term has gone out of use pretty much. But it's like ESAP in the early 1990s. We've got to go back to doing something quite similar to that.
Okay, I've got a question here on 0731 168 045. If we have our own currency, do we have enough controls to ensure that businesses don't continue to charge in US dollars? That has been the screaming argument of like, oh, this Armageddon type of situation. Can that be, especially if you're talking about a free market economy, can that be regulated?
Well, not really, because you don't have the reserves to regulate it. Essentially, what would happen is what happens now. If you go to certain shops, and I better not name them on your radio, they will say to you, if you pay in US dollars, your price is much lower than if you pay in bond notes, or TDS. So you get an exchange rate, something between 3, 3.5, 4 to 1, and it depends where you are. Pharmacists these days seem to me to be working on 4 to 1, but it does vary. And when the platform, the sort of thing that we've been speaking about, it comes in, it doesn't seem to me to be a matter of if, but when. And when that comes in, then people will find they can pay in dollars if they happen to have the dollars. Otherwise, they can swap the dollars at the market rate for local currency, or swap the local currency at the market rate for dollars, depending which way they want it. And the market in that way will sort of even out.
So given that sort of scenario, will this still leave leeway or existing leeway for, say, the guy on the street who's selling currency? Won't that sort of create some sort of distortion on what you can get on the street and what you can get from the bidding
system?
Platform.
Look, people will prefer to doing the business in the banks, in the official system. I mean, that's the preference, because you don't know what you're going to get out there. Because you put in, maybe you think you've got an RTGS, bond notes, you've got a bunch of papers, you think you've got a US, you've got a bunch of fake US dollar notes. Whereas if you do it in a bank, obviously there's always, in any economy, there's a black market. But that must be a smaller component of the transactions that happen. And as I was saying, most people, businesses, be it and individuals, would rather carry out these transactions in a bank, in an official setting, where you're not going to lose your money.
So, within the last 3-4 minutes, I'm going to start with Professor Hawkins. What is the best case scenario? I know we've pretty much painted the darkest of the dark, but I'm saying, what is the best case scenario?
Well, you know, there's no good solution to the currency problem that we have. Any solution you look at is going to be painful. For people who've saved money, for pensions, for people on fairly fixed incomes, for banks, etc. So one has to just accept that reality, I think. There's no, you know, the famous political statement, there's no gain without pain, and I fear that there's some truth in that one. My argument, with what I would simply say to try and answer your question without ducking it too much, and just say, look, the solution is to, the sooner you do it, the better. It's like having toothache. You know, if you leave it for long, then you can't just drill it or fill it or something. It's got to take it out. So the sooner you get on with it, the better. I think that would lessen the pain. But I think the second point I'd make, just to finish, is you've got to accept that this is not, I repeat what I said earlier, purely an economic issue. Mm-hmm. There are political and social and other ramifications that have to be taken into account.
Okay, same question.
I think as was highlighted, I think the clarity, I think the point that the professor highlighted, which I think may not have been communicated clearly, which the nation needs to appreciate, is that we are in some form of structural adjustment program, which has got, there will be the tough decisions to be made, and there are things that there are bold decisions that have to be made in order to start to get us on a path. That's how a lot of it is in the transitional stabilization program. We need if there's an implementation of that, perhaps as business, we could. If we're ready, okay. We're having a first quarter which is tough. Perhaps we, at best, we could maybe try and achieve what we achieved last year if this platform is at least set up, and there's a better management of the fourth quarter. Because the fourth quarter is always a challenge for business, but certainly the tough decisions have to be made by the authorities, and there has to be better communication by the players in the economy to know what's going to happen. And if there's that, the platform is set up, the better management of fourth quarter, perhaps will be. We may achieve hopefully what is there, but otherwise the projection from the membership, when we asked them last year, was that they believe that 2019 will be a worse year.
Okay, I've been hearing that, even watching the rest of the world. They say, okay, you should be worried about 2019, if you've got money, hold on to it, and that sort of thing. So maybe also with the global trends, everybody's sort of not worried about investing anywhere in the world right now. We just have to stick it out, as you said, and just focus on the reforms. I'm an eternal optimist. I know that economists tend to default to the worst case scenario. So I'm hoping that one of these things could be wrong. But thank you very much, Sifulani Chabangwe from the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries. Thank you very much for the work that you're doing there, and always for coming through to ZFM Stereo. And Professor Tony Hawkins, economist, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's that for me. I'm back with you next week, Monday. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. And as I always say from where I come from, my name is Larry Quiroga. I see you, Sasebenza. Take care of yourself.